They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Royal Alliance UK podcast, episode 243, Clinching Season. My name is Matthew Turner, alongside Ryan McCluskey, Tom Wilkinson, Stephen Collins. How are you doing, boys?
Like a champion.
I feel like a king. King of the North.
Vindicated. That's how I feel. I feel like a Twitter god because, I went after some people. Dished out all those years of pain. It's like my turn to be a dick.
Yeah, absolutely here for it. Hope that you all listening to this have had an excellent Christmas and Boxing Day and rest of your Christmas period is whenever you listen to this. We, of course, are going to be going through Lions at Vikings, but because it is Christmas and because we have other stuff to do, this is going to be a short show. So, cutting the crap. And getting straight into it. Lions clinch first NFC North title, their first division title since the NFC Central in 1993. They will be hosting a home playoff game. And boys, before we get into the Vikings game, it's been a long journey for us as a show. It's been a long journey for Lions fans generally. Just the floor is open to each of you to speak about what it means to you. And I mean, me and Ant went live straight after the game, basically in absolute pieces. So I'm going to open the floor to you to just talk about how it felt and, you know, the personal journey that you've been on, perhaps whatever you want to say, but the floor is yours.
I mean, I don't think it's sunk in yet. Like, you know, we've all been like buzzing, but I still don't think the kind of magnitude of where we've come from, you know, I mean, that 3-13 season, you know, it's like etched on all of our memories, but just a lot of crap before then. And I think when, like for me, when Stafford got traded, that kind of felt like, you know, just been off the next 5 or 6 years. And the fact that we've managed to rebound from that so quickly, because, you know, obviously when Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell arrived, there was a talk of the rebuild and, you know, it sounds great, but you kind of are thinking to yourself, well, I need to keep my expectations in check. But to do it like relatively so quickly. And then, I mean, you know, I mean, I've known Detroit going back to the Barry Sanders years, and it was just like a decade of like bleakness. So it just kind of feels unreal now. And I think it won't be until when we step on the field at Ford Field and, you know, the crowd are going absolutely ballistic in that first playoff game. Like, that's going to be the moment, I think, that it sinks in. Because, you know, we went into Minnesota and effectively it didn't feel like we were going into the Lions' den. It didn't feel like the team were, like, under siege from the crowd. They dealt with it really well. And I think Ford Field, the roof's just going to come off, and then I think we'll all be like, okay, this is, we've arrived.
I think we talked about it a little bit over the last couple of weeks about kind of our frustrations as fans during various times over the last 6 to 8 weeks, but everything's been quite micro. It's been something that's happened in a particular game and it felt like the world is ending and all those kind of things. And it was almost, I wasn't a fan during, say, the Millen years, for example. So my fandom is still newer than a lot of people. And when we finally won that game, got that pick, and then you start seeing all the messages, the videos, everything flood social media of people's individual journeys through the last 30 years, basically. It was just a wonderful kind of chance to go completely macro. So rather than thinking about the small little moments in games or whatever this season, which we've all been very focused on, and ultimately it's our job as part of this podcast to talk about, to just like take a step back and think this is 30 years in the making, and what this means to so many people was, I think, pretty cool. Whether it was Christmas Eve or not Christmas Eve, just to have that moment and see the joy across so many different Lions fans who, let's be honest, have been through quite a lot over the past 30 years. It was just awesome. And I think it's less even about my reaction. It was just amazing to see everyone's messages, whether it was in our Discord community or Twitter or Instagram and places which can quite often be negative, just to see that kind of overwhelming positivity, excitement, emotion in one place was pretty damn special, to be honest. So yeah, I think that was my biggest takeaway, is just how much it meant to so many people across the community.
Yeah, I echo that. Like, you see the reactions of the players, that the so-called elder statesmen that have been on the roster, that have been through the ups, the downs, the lows. It's been a long journey for them. The fans, like I say, that are in their 50s and 60s, and they've longed for moments like this. For them, that it really felt like it was finally their time, like in the sun. And like, so the last few years, not been all the kind, not just on the field, but off it. Like, say, in fact, we lost guys, like we saw Diggs taken away from us, we saw Slay, we saw Stafford go, and then you feel like you see Stafford succeed instantly and just feel like that was just, it stung a little, even though you're happy for him. And yeah, personally for me as well, last 13 years, like Bradford, they've hurt me a lot. Sports hurt me a lot with the 0-16. We've seen guys, like say, come into the organisation and they've left it worse than they found it. So it's been quite a long journey at this point. But yeah, but we did it in Lions fashion as well. We made incredibly hard work of it. And I don't think I'd have had it any other way. If it had gone in there and kicked their ass, it just wouldn't have been right. It had to be a nail biter. But yeah, now the pressure, as well as in one way, says that some pressure's lifted, others intensified now because you're looking towards further on in the season. But I feel like we'll see them now play their best football, because they've kind of ticked the box that they wanted to tick. And now everything else, like, is just, like I said, potential, what can happen. Like I say, we've got it off the back. So it feels like now that a sense will have lifted off them, a weight, that they've got it done. There's no more, like, they've broken that old unwanted thing. And now, yeah, look forward to the postseason now. So yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah, when they get back to Ford Field, I think it will really hit them. Like I say, the banner should be there, or they'll be putting a banner up and they'll look up and they'll remember that.
I think what's so enfranchising about everything that's happened, no matter how long you've been a fan, is that we've been down to the very depths of where a team can possibly go very recently. You know, it wasn't 0-16, which actually wasn't that long ago, but during the previous regime and feeling like you're going backwards, and then hitting rock bottom after that when they get fired because you have to tear the team down and you actually end up getting worse before you get better. Like, all of us have experienced that and we're still here. And then most rebuilding teams, we know the formula. You bring in a new team, a new staff, they have their vision. It's going to take us 3 to 5 years to become competitive. And, you know, and then we're really going to do this thing because we're going to have a great set of draft picks because we're so bad. And then we're going to turn those into some great players, and free agents will then want to come and join us. And then we're going to do this thing. And Philadelphia obviously come to mind in doing that, because they're able to just cycle through and boom and bust pretty consistently, and it works for them. But then you think about the rest of the league, and it's like, that rarely happens, if ever. And actually, most rebuilding teams are bad, have a 3-year plan, gradually improve, but never enough to actually get over the hump, become a Jeff Fisher Rams team. And they're like, this isn't good enough, so let's start again. And they end up rebuilding again and go back down. Most teams just kind of do that sort of U-shaped performance. If high is right up here and Ewing is, they never kind of get above 50%. The fact that we've done this is ridiculous, really, from where we've been. Why would anyone want to come here? There's no reason that people would want to come here. The tax rates aren't great. You can't even sell them that. The weather's cold. It's a losing franchise with a crap owner, as was. Crap in football terms. how things have changed in the last 5 years and how gratifying it was is just, I don't think it can be stated. It can be overstated, but I just can't think it can be stated. How can you put it into words?
I mean, I think that, you know, what the best that people could hope for was a scraping into a wild card and then maybe, like, you know, sneaking a win or, you know, going, you know, wild cards and then out, but then maybe like building on it. But the fact that we've gone from, you know, kind of disappointment to missing out last year, but still having a great sort of statement finish to the year. And, you know, you expect that's going to be a full storm and we're going to start and have a tough start to this season. And we went out and we beat the Chiefs at Arrowhead in the first game. And then, you know, the momentum has been pretty solid all the way through. We've had that sort of 2-3 games where we were really shaky when we lost to the Packers. That I think was disappointing. But the fact that we've never been on a kind of like nosedive at any point in the season where it's really started to go bad. You know, it's, I think someone said, you know, we always have a bounce back game. And, you know, to go into Minnesota, you know, who have just been fraudulently been so sort of dominant in the last sort of couple of years, and just, you know, take over the game. But then obviously, as Ryan said, we did the classic thing of kick their ass, but then still let them back in and have a bit of a heart attack, which is very Lions.
And I mean, let's talk about the game then. That segues us perfectly into talking about it. So the Lions win the game 30-24. Goff, 30 of 40. I mean, I can't imagine that we'd have thought he'd have passed that much in this game. 30 of 40 for 257 and a touchdown. On the ground, Gibbs 15 for 80 and 2. Montgomery was 17 for 55 and 1. Overall, that's about four yards of carry, if my math is right, just under, and three touchdowns. In the air, Amarasen Brown, 12 of 14 for 106 and a touchdown. Jameson Williams with five catches and six targets for 43 yards. Vikings, Mullins, 22 of 36, 411 yards, but two touchdowns and four picks. Only 17 yards on the ground total. And then receiving-wise, Jefferson obviously had a magnificent day, 6 of 10 for 141 and a touchdown. KJ Osborne, 5 of 7 for 95 and a touchdown. We also had those picks, of course, two by Joseph, one by Melifonwu, one by Branch. I'll stop there with the stats because it's boring otherwise. But, boys, high-level takes before we go into offense and defense. But it felt like if we were going to lose, it was beating ourselves because, as Steve said, we kind of did take control of the game.
And there was a few moments where it felt like we maybe were beating ourselves, right? But at the same time, I think there was enough positive throughout to know that we were in good shape, I would say. Now, yes, there were definitely things we did to make it more Lions-y, let's say. Whether it's extra points that don't go over, whether it's drop picks on the goal line, there were definitely a few moments. But ultimately, it's almost, going back to our previous point, it's roster construction. We were better almost across the board. I mean, Justin Jefferson's a freak. Some of the things he did were just out of this world just in that single game. It's almost, you obviously don't want him to do those things, but sometimes you feel quite privileged to watch guys do the kind of stuff he was doing. But otherwise, we're just a better team than them. And even, I know they've had a few injury issues. Obviously, Kirk is one, but you can't look across their roster and tell me that they have a stronger roster than us. And again, where we were 2 years ago, I mean, that's just insane. So, yeah, I mean, it was nerve-wracking, but I think it was always going to be nerve-wracking for us, to be perfectly honest, given the last, 30 years. Yeah.
It was one of those games as well where for everything we did that felt self-detrimental, they did two things. We got heavily penalised, but some of their penalties were even more boneheaded. Like I said, they, in their home stadium with great support, they lost their cool, whereas in times we kept it. And like I say, we managed, they were struggling to snap their own ball. I said they had multiple false starts themselves, so they struggled with the pressure knowing that they were in a one-and-done situation. Like I say, they had to win, like I say, just to have any glimmer of hope going into the future, and that weighed pretty heavily. And yeah, with the weapons they have, they just kind of have the, we need a plug-and-play quarterback, like I say, because Jefferson can do all the heavy lifting. and Hockenson for long in the game. Like, they've got lots of weapons that can hurt you lots of ways, but no longer on the ground. Like I say, the past Vikings teams have always been a well-established a run, open up the pass, but that's kind of gone. That's kind of a thing of the past right now. It's a pass to open up the pass. So it does kind of play into the hands of a team that is able to have playmakers on the back end. So, yeah, I was never worried for, like, major parts of the game until the end, like you say, where it just felt like we were bending but not breaking. But, yeah, in the end, we did come through. But, yeah, we saw them make some of those plays where it's really frustrating, but then you kind of just think, well, how do you stop that? Like, sometimes, like you say, like, there's two people there. So it's maddening. And honestly, I want to break the screen. But then I just think, well, a lot of guys just aren't capable of making that play in the league. So only he could really do that to us. And it doesn't really matter who's going to be quarterback for the next 5-10 years. Until Justin Jefferson gets fed up and demands a trade, he will truly be a thorn in our side with whoever's at quarterback. Unfortunately, that's just the realistic world we live in right now. And guys like KJ Osborne, he always plays really well against us as well. He's become quite a dependable 2-3 guy. So they're quite frustrating across the board. They do have quite a large, varied weapon of skill sets that I think I'd be very happy to call our own. So yeah, they did what they could, but nullified the ground game. We took everything away from them completely. I was wrong when I said Alexander Mattison would be plug and play. Dalvin Cook has gone. It's just not panned out at all. Like say, their run game has just been anemic. So that was something. They've become so one-dimensional that it just hurts them as well as it helps them.
Yeah, I think when Matt was reading out the stats, when you said about how many times Goff threw the ball, was it 30 out of 40?
Yeah.
You immediately think, oh my God, our run game must have been terrible for him to throw that much. But it wasn't. Our run game was really good. We always looked like we could move the ball on the ground. Gibbs was really good. Gibbs, again, just like made a couple of runs where, you know, say it very quietly, he looks very much like a Detroit Lions running back from a couple of decades ago at times, because he was just making people miss, like, badly, embarrassingly. And Montgomery was great as well. So I think, you know, the offense is ticking and the defense did the thing it does where it's not great, but it makes the big plays. And I think probably, you know, if we're talking like a bit long term here, the biggest advantage for us on defense today was Nick Mullins, because Nick Mullins is like one of those quarterbacks, like probably 50% of the league's quarterbacks are, that when they're under pressure, and my God, we put them under pressure, they go to pieces. And we've seen Goff do it at his worst, but what we saw yesterday was good Goff, where he just soaks up the pressure. And he's still really accurate and really calm. And other than kind of like rolling into a sack at one point, he didn't really make many mistakes. Whereas Mullins made, you know, 4 critical mistakes, actually 5 or 6 critical mistakes, a couple that we missed. But the good thing was our defense have got the players now, Branch, Joseph, you know, that are going to make teams pay. And they did. And big credit to the defense. Like, There were little moments when it, you know, they, and this is where Aaron Glenn like struggles sometimes, because they'll pick on one of our cornerbacks. And I think they picked on Dorsey for like 3 plays, and all of a sudden KJ Osborne's got like 50 yards out of nowhere, and it's that reaction time. But the fact that we've got players that can make a play and change the course of the game, just that's why we're in the playoffs, and that's why we'll win the division.
So brief offensive thoughts. Performance for kind of 3.5 quarters just seemed to be fairly good. Offensive line were fantastic all the way through, pretty much. Elite game from several players in there, boys. And, you know, just to read out the drive ends for us, it went touchdown, fumble, punt. But then it went field goal, touchdown, half, touchdown, touchdown, punt, punt, end of game. So what did you think of the overall game for the offense. I mean, peripheral players kind of came to play. Donovan Peoples-Jones had a big third down catch to convert when the game was in the balance. Khalif came to play. J-Mo with another kind of ascension game for him. Ben Johnson had a fairly good game calling it until maybe the game was on the line. I don't know. I mean, some people saying he went into a shell, but it just seemed like the execution also went when the end of the game came around. What did he make of the offense?
I think you mentioned the offensive line. They just completely controlled the game. And I think maybe we underestimated how important it is to have those starting five, because for so much of the last 3 years, we haven't had our starting five of that time. And they just look so comfortable together. And ultimately, in complete control of that line of scrimmage. So, like you say, when you go through those drives, actually, there's a fumble in there, which you can't control, as in obviously the individual can control, but these things happen. There was one punt, and then am I right in saying the only non-scoring drives from that point on were the two punts at the end, when obviously that's you're in a very different, like, you're play calling very different in general, right? Because you're trying to run time off the clock. So how defensive or not you want to get, you can't be rash. You can't just go calling three pass plays back to back and giving more time on the clock. So in general, offensive line was great, but I think this is a theme really across both sides of the ball. Like, our guys came to play. And actually, probably with the exception of Laporta, who had a quiet game, it was Amon-Ra went over 100, I think I'm right in saying. Both running backs did their thing. Offensive line dominated. Goff was good. J-Mo keeps, and I think the thing I'm so excited about with J-Mo, I think he's going to have a breakout game very quickly, is he's making the tough catches now as well as the easy catches. And to me, for someone we talked about who seems to be such a confidence player, like 4 for 40, 5 for 50, these kind of box scores are actually super important. Getting him involved, having him actually make these tough catches, keep building that confidence, because we know he's going to be scoring 60, 70-yard touchdowns every now and again to go with that. So it was really across the offense, just the guys came to play and they delivered on the big stage. And we'll come to talk defense, but it was a pretty similar thing.
The thing is, Tom, as well, you talk about the O-line, is that Brian Flores blitz package defense has ripped so many teams apart.
This is a Minnesota defense that had conceded the least points in the last 12 weeks in the entire league. As well, 15 points per game average.
We gave up five pressures. But I get that they maybe don't have the superstars on that D-line to the same extent, but you're completely right. That is a nightmare to deal with. And Frank Ragnow, I mean, Penei Sewell has obviously been all world, but Frank Ragnow is probably the most important part of that for this game specifically, being in control of all those checks, knowing where those blitzes are coming from. And so to have that little pressure is just unbelievable.
Yeah, for me as well, the O-line just did a fantastic game in just getting to the next level and helping blocks, because Montgomery was missing for nearly the entire quarter in the concussion protocol when they were checking him out. So Gibbs was doing the dirty stuff that he's not usually accustomed to, or, well, he doesn't like doing it, but he can do it. So they were giving him that extra little push for those fourth down conversions, the third and short, when he wasn't getting outside and has to run up the tackle. So, and yeah, the Vikings were fifth against the run before this game. So they had a really strong interior. And Harrison Phillips is one of the best nose tackles in the league. He's playing really good stuff right now. And we nullified them. Yeah, we created big holes, got to next level. And we worked against some of that. We exploited the middle of the field, because we know that in Bynum and Metellus, two of the better safety pairs for me in the league. I'm actually a huge fan of Josh Metellus. He just got that big extension. I was hoping he was going to hit free agency for Michigan, but he was brilliant. But yeah, like, we really went after the linebackers, like, say, finding those, like, guys like Raymond and Reynolds just sitting in them holes in between the backer and safety, just find it, sit down, and just make yourself available. And credit to Goff. He was getting the ball out probably some of the quickest I've seen all season. If it wasn't there, it was gone. Or just got rid of it. Or check it down. Like I said, there was no extra 1, 2, 3 seconds to just... It was either there, it was had it, or he got rid of it. So the strikes were very quick.
I think the other aspect of that was when they were rushing four, he was getting the ball out quickly. When they were blitzing, he was getting the ball out quickly. But apart from one instance, when they were rushing three, dropping A, he actually had the Witherall to take his time when they were well protected. The one sack came from him trying to escape when he felt pressure and went the wrong way. But the turnovers come in drop A, where you make a snap decision where the defense is showing something and it's they're disguising it and you actually misread what's going on. And he gave himself time to make the correct decision on drop eights, which is what Minnesota has been so good at this year on defense. So, yes, getting the ball out quickly when appropriate, but recognizing when he had time as well was a big factor in this game.
And, I mean, way too early to talk about the draft, but when you look at our offense now, the only piece we're missing is that big contested catch guy, the thing that, you know, Golladay did it so well when he was at his kind of peak. And if we can find in free agency or the draft that piece, the offense is kind of complete and is going to rival anyone. Because, like I said, the O-line's there, Goff was good, and, you know, Amon-Ra. You know, Amon-Ra is kind of, I don't think Amon-Ra is ever a wide receiver one, but he's stepped up to be one of the best wide receivers in the league. Because he's a slot guy, really. But he can do anything, and he did do everything. He caught so many balls in tight windows. He, after having those couple of drops, which is so unlike him, his hands were so safe all the way through the game, and he just stepped up and looked absolutely awesome and set the example. So, as Tom said, Laporte had a quiet game, but here's Amon-Ra back with 100 yards plus, and Jamo just looks like his confidence is growing every game, and I think next season is just going to be lethal.
Turning our attention to the defense before we talk cigars, defense stout versus the run, but they didn't really try too much, and I don't know what was in their game plan, but Ty Chandler came off a 100-yard game the game before, so it wasn't like they lacked confidence on that side, but maybe our reputation against run defenders just kind of preceded us, and maybe they thought our weakness was secondary. And they went after it, and sometimes it worked, but a lot of times it didn't. We gave up big plays, but we got some great interceptions. Boys, defense overall, I mean, giving up, you know, third and forever is frustrating, and it's been a feature of the Lions since I can remember that third and long feels like it you can give that up. But the turnovers came today, and actually we missed some as well. You know, Kaminsky couldn't land on a fumble to ice the game. There are other instances where actually we didn't take every opportunity. Branch had the missed interception very early on, and yet we kept continuing to create these opportunities. And as Steve said, we continue to put pressure on them. Our defensive line has been an issue, apart from Hutchinson, pretty much all season, and McNeil, who obviously isn't active at the moment. And we got lots of pressure. And it feels like there's been a subtle shift in scheme from Glenn, and he's actually found a little bit of something from somewhere else.
I think you've got to, like, what we need to see from AG is his ability to adjust to different teams, because, I mean, we were talking a little bit about it live, but Nick Mullins looked like he couldn't handle pressure. So let's keep sending it, and we know that we're going to get burnt a couple of times on the back end, but he's going to make mistakes, and he did. There's going to be other quarterbacks we play where that's not the case. And then what are we going to do? How are we going to adjust to that? And that's where, I mean, again, we're not going to have any negativity on this pod today, but that's where we've seen kind of failings previously. So I want to see him to be able to do that against other people as well. But in terms of, in general, what I was most impressed about was really that second level. And when we talk about the run defense, obviously the guys up front did a good job. But actually, it was when our safeties came out of the box, whether it's Ify playing down low, whether it's obviously Brian Branch is playing around the line of scrimmage. Jack Campbell had a good game. Anzalone had a good game after a rough few weeks. So it was those guys that I think really stepped up and just swarm to the ball. And that's what you want to see with your defense is, yes, you want the guys up front to control the line of scrimmage, but you want everyone else to be around that ball when that tackle's made. And we saw that pretty consistently across. We still had some issues on the back end. I don't think that's going to go away. I think we're going to have to learn to live with that, to be perfectly honest, with this roster we've got. But yeah, I mean, Matt, I know you've been all aboard the Ify train, especially the last few weeks. So it must feel vindicating for you to see that kind of performance.
Yeah. Oh, being aboard the Ify train is pretty cool. Sorry, Ryan, you go ahead.
Yeah. See, I've accepted that for me, cornerback play on the outside coverage, it's going to be an issue for the rest of the season. The safeties for me this week, they bailed them out with the turnovers because, yeah, they really struggled. And but I never had that much faith in the position group, if I'm honest. So that's not new. That's not a slight on them. That's just we're trying to work with group of what we've got. Saying that, yeah, Kendall Vildor, good at line of scrimmage, good, like, say, blowing up screens, sniffing out shorter stuff. He comes down hard, fast, makes strong tackles. So he's impressed me in the tackling side of the game. He's got a good nose for the ball, made some good plays. But, yeah, Kerb Joseph has been, I'd say this assistant, very inconsistent this season. I'd say some of his tackling has been a bit off, but him, Ife, Branch, like say, they really did do well in recognising when how long players were taking to develop. The Vikings, like say, they have that thing where a lot of the guys, like, they're happy to wait for the ball, and we've got guys that are happy to go and get it. And you see that with the game-winning interception. Justin Jefferson knows it's coming. He just waits for it. And if he says, no, I'm going to sniff it out. I was pretty sure that was going to be a game-tying winning score when it happened in real time. I thought it's over, but no, like they broke on it. They're more reactive, like say when players come up, they break quickly on the ball, and that's something that I really like to see. But yeah, Campbell, Anzalone, they had a good guys around buzzing around the middle of the field, making tackles, especially like say short of the sticks. Like say a lot of players where it looked like they had space, we were swarming, and we made them have third downs and one. Fourth and two, they kept them, and we made them make decisions like, are we going to go for it? Are we going to punt? Like I say, so O'Connell did have a lot of things to think about in the game because we were doing really well in stopping them just short of the sticks. But yeah, I was happy, like I say, the D line generating just consistent pressure, just ticking over. Like I say, a lot of times, like Ife, Anzalone, Hutch, not getting anywhere near it, but they do the next best thing, they put the hand up. You get it in the passing lane. You make him throw the ball around you. That's where Nick is not comfortable. If he's got to try get it past five fingers and get it on target, then you know the throw is going to be slightly off. So it's a runners-up prize. You don't get the sack, you might not get the pressure, but if you can make him make a more dangerous throw, then that's better, and it buys a bit of time for us on the back end. So yeah, the D-line did a good way of just being a pain in the ass, being a nuisance, just getting in passing lanes, just making its presence known. And I liked that about some of them. Not supreme athletes. They know they're not going to get there, but when it goes, like, get both hands up. And you never know, like you said, there was a few batted balls. There could have been a few extra interceptions, some of those balls that didn't find the target. So, yeah, for everything they did that, like I said, gave a big explosive play that hurt us, like I said, we just doubled down on it and were consistent in just ticking over, managing the clock, keeping them in bounds when they were trying to get out because they were looking for the sideline often. Like, say, we said, nope, you'll stay in. We'll force you to use the timeouts because they'd used all the timeouts in that second half really quickly. And that was from good tackling and not letting them escape. So, yeah, for the most part, I was very happy with the defensive side of the ball.
And I think, you know, like going back to the secondary, like Cam Sutton's shown this season, he's been quietly effective, but you know, he's a CB2. He's not a CB1. And we're up against Justin Jefferson. And you know, most teams CB1 aren't going to compete with Justin Jefferson. You know, Jefferson is that elite guy, you know, up there with like Debo Samuel and Tyreek Hill, that he's going to cause problems for probably everyone apart from three or four elite cornerbacks in the NFL. And, you know, again, this is something that we've got to address next year. But if the safeties can do their job, which they absolutely did, you know, and this is all down to Aaron Glenn, if he can make sure that those safeties are giving the cornerback support, we can deal with these things, or we can at least minimise the damage.
Many thanks to Ken Stowder in the YouTube chat for the super sticker of $50. Thank you very much, Ken. You absolute legend. Appreciate you very much. He says, we won the North.
Boys, how much are you going to give us when we win the Super Bowl, Ken? That's got to be worth 500, yeah?
That's ignores
much
the
appreciated.
Oh, much appreciated. time to hand out some cigars, people, and there's probably a few to go around. So pick a couple, why don't you?
All right. Are we talking both sides of the ball?
Go for it. Whatever you want.
Mentioned Frank Ragnow earlier, but both of mine, I'm going to go for comeback guys. So Taylor Decker has definitely struggled the last few weeks. He was pretty much rock solid, really impressive comeback. And then on the defensive side, Alexander Zalone has had a rough previous 3 weeks. But again, didn't set the world on fire, but just good, solid, well, solid above average play. And ultimately, that's what wins you games, is when you've got 11 guys doing that on one side of the ball. So really impressed with both of those guys.
Jack Fox, like I said, he had a better week this week. Like I said, there were some shaky punts last few weeks, bad snaps with shaky punts, but this time, like I said, when he had to pin them deep and give a whole field to work with, he did. Like I said, they started at like the 12-yard line, didn't they, that last drive? So they had to go a long way to get the score. Could have done it, but like I say, he did what was asked of him in those high-pressure moments, and he is a guy for the high-pressure punt. So, yeah, like I said, there some penalties on some of them, but like I say, he can only put the ball where it lands and just hope no one blocks in the back or anything like that. So yeah, he had a very solid job, and he made life a lot harder for them.
Yeah, Jared Goff. I mean, yeah, we've seen, just watching this week's NFL, we've seen how quarterbacks can just crumble under pressure. And we've seen quarterbacks this week just completely wreck their team's playoff chances by just throwing picks at the wrong time and just losing the plot. And, you know, Goff's gone into a pretty tough situation, you know, facing the Brian Flores blitzes away at the Vikings. Vikings Stadium is meant to be one of the most intimidating places to play. And the guy had ice in his veins. The ball security was good. He's throwing placement. He was throwing some really tight windows. You've got to give it to him, because you know, if he'd have had a wobbly game, there's no way we'd have won that.
All right, two for me, both going on defense. First one, I have to be on my guy's side. So Melifonwu, come and get it, because you absolute legend. And the thing is, it's not even the interceptions, which really haven't been a part of his game, where he's come to play and I'm like, this is what I want you to do. It's the safety blitzes. Like, he's just so good at them. And unlocking that, I think, has been part of the key to transforming this defense. Because every time Glenn wants to disguise something and change a drive, it seems to be Melifonwu that's the guy that's trusted to do that. And it's working. And he's really,
and
really
good. And he's tackling so much better. Just his tackler.
He's a completely different player, and I don't think you can drop him. If CJGJ comes back, I think it's Melifonwu and CJGJ. I think that Kirby's the one that needs to drop, not Melifonwu. And I could be, I'll probably end up being wrong, because Kirby's the guy who's been in there the longest now of that room, but I don't see how you can drop him to the bench. The second guy is the guy that I think should be taking the mantle at cornerback one. That's Kendall Vildor. The guy has come in and he's just not looked out of place. He's sharp in run and pass. I just haven't seen anything wrong from him. And, you know, Sutton sometimes just seems to be all at sea, getting beaten by players who are better than he is, because he's a cornerback too, as has been mentioned earlier. But he's certainly better than Dorsey. And I didn't really understand Dorsey getting the nod over Vildor last week. And then he got it again this week. And I don't really get it. Maybe it's a acclimatization still for him. But I want to see Vildor start against the Cowboys. And I mean, we're going up against CeeDee Lamb. So let's have our best cornerbacks on the field, please. But those are my two guys. Any honorable mentions from you guys before we sign off?
I think Ragnar as well. You've got to go with Ragnar, because, you know, as Tom said, just so efficient at making the right calls in terms of looking at the blitzes and making sure that O-line was kind of pointing in the right direction. Ragnar had a brilliant game. And so did all of the O-line, but Ragnar especially.
I'd say Montgomery. He was He was average in the run game, but his run blocking was great. He picked up some key blitzes when guys were about to get in Goff's face. So, yeah, some of them were really important, especially to prolong drives.
All right, let's call it a show there. We got one question from Mike, but I'm going to address that just after we sign off. Cowboys game is on Saturday night in primetime, 1:15 a.m. UK time. Me and Ash, I think, are going to be on the call for that at 1 a.m. So come and join us for that. The preview show, because of family commitments, it will happen, but it's up in the air as to when. I think Thursday afternoon, evening time at some point, but maybe later than the normally advertised time. So keep your eyes peeled for that. College podcast, Ryan, I'm assuming it's still kind of bowl game stuff that you guys are talking and will be talking about in the next few episodes.
Yeah, we've got the review of last week's games. We're going to look at, I think, most of the senior role and all-star game rosters are announced, and it's time to look towards New Year's Day. It's a college football playoffs on the calendar, and yeah, you've got the big bowl games on New Year's Day, so there are other things there to look at.
All right, that's our show. So I hope you have enjoyed it. It's been a celebration of what has been in the last 5 years all the way up till this point. And I mean, this season ain't over yet. The number one seed is potentially just two games away. We just have to win out and have San Francisco drop one and we get a bye. So let's see what happens in the next couple of weeks. We live in hope. But for now, people, just go out and enjoy it with your loved ones. Have a few drinks. Have as much to eat as you fancy. Have a great New Year's. We'll see you for the Cowboys game. But for now, boys, thank you for joining me. Let's go, Las One Pride.